And what happens is we pile on even more to our existing employees when our new employees aren't doing it. And then we expect them to bear the burden of that turnover in the new employee position. And next thing we know, we have our veteran employees, our long-term employees saying, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. We're like, oh, we'll give you more money. We'll give you a better title. And they're like, no, it's not about that. It's about the fact that I feel zero support, zero respect, zero consideration. And now we've got a cycle that is really hard to pull out of.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with Joey Coleman. Joey was on the Simple Brand Podcast back in episode 73, where he talked about how to attract and retain loyal customers. This time, he's back with his new book, Never Lose an Employee Again, The Simple Path to Remarkable Retention. His book just released this week. Sure, finding quality employees is pretty challenging today, but even harder is actually keeping them. I mean, how do you create a foundation with your new hires that leads to, well, not just retention, but long-term commitment and long-term advocacy? It turns out that a lot of the lessons on attracting and retaining loyal customers also apply to attracting and retaining loyal employees. And Joey has just the framework to help you do that. So here it is. Here's my interview with Joey Coleman. Hey, Joey, welcome back.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be back in conversation with you and your amazing audience.
Well, I'm excited as well because congrats for releasing Never Lose an Employee Again.
Thank you so much. It has been a fun project, and I am thrilled that it's out there in the world for folks to hopefully get some ideas from, get some inspiration from, and solve what I think is a problem that a lot of employers have, which is how do we find and hire and train and retain great people?
Yeah, it's not just about hiring them and finding them and hiring. It's about keeping them as well.
It really is. Yeah. And it's kind of all the steps, if you will, of the employee journey are equally valuable. The problem is most organizations aren't paying attention to all of them. They're maybe over-indexing on one or two, which I understand and I get. There's no judgment in that. There's just a huge opportunity that if you switch that a little, the game really becomes quite different.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate you using the term employee journey. I don't think we hear or use that term often enough. We talk about the customer journey a lot.
And, yes.
And I'm of the belief that, at least at a high level, the lessons that go into delivering a simple and remarkable customer experience are the same lessons that go into delivering a simple and remarkable employee experience. So based on that, how similar was your writing and how similar was your writing process for this book compared to Never Lose a Customer Again?
Well, I will tell you, Matt, as a writer and speaker, I went into this thinking for personal reasons, man, if this was similar in a framework to my first book, Never Lose a Customer Again, it will make the amount of brain power I have to devote to this project much less. And it will increase the likelihood that when I'm speaking, I'm talking about the right topic and not confusing which speech I'm giving. I have to tell you, when I got into the research, I was thrilled to find out that what was going to potentially serve me actually aligned beautifully with the practical reality of the employee experience, with one distinction. I talked about eight phases in the customer journey in my first book. We're talking about eight phases in the employee journey in the second book. There is one phase that we've renamed, and that's the accept phase, because everybody's familiar with accepting a job offer.
Right.
In the customer side, it's admitting a customer, but it's the same emotional journey. It's the same thing that's happening to the human being, because whether they're customers or employees, the practical reality is they're humans. And if we meet them emotionally where they're at, we can create the kind of remarkable experiences that'll keep them coming back for more.
That's it. Yeah. So when I started reading the book, I jumped in and I was getting through it and I was thinking, hey, wait, this sounds familiar. this sounds familiar. So then I paused. I went and grabbed my copy of Never Lose a Customer Again. I put it down next to it and I said, oh, that matches. That matches. Awesome. It's the same lessons.
Exactly. And my hope is that folks who are familiar with paying attention to customer experience can, to your point, take those same simple, obvious, clear, effective, remarkable techniques and just instead of pushing them externally to our customers, turn them internally on our coworkers and our colleagues and our team members. It's really that simple.
Yeah. And you know me, simplicity is my love.
I do. Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think there's so much going on. It's difficult to be a business owner. It is difficult to be a leader, a middle manager, someone who's trying to drive a team forward and get people excited and get them motivated. So wherever we can keep this simple and clear and implement a framework that is repeatable and we can be consistent around, it makes everybody's lives not only easier and more efficient, but I would posit more fun and more interesting because we free up space to do the special personalizations that really move the dial.
So last time we talked, one of the things that we talked about was the fact that so many brands will focus on customer acquisition instead of customer attention or not placing the right focus on both. And it sounds like that's the same case when it comes to finding and hiring new employees. Put all these resources, all these investments into finding and hiring employees, and then not enough investment, resources, time, effort in retaining employees. So why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for it, Matt. I think there's a biological reason, and I think there's a structural reason primarily. So let's talk about both. The biological reason, humans have a tendency to enjoy the chase more than the catch. We like to pursue more than to grow and retain. And we see this even in people's dating lives. As a general rule, most humans better at dating than they are at being in a relationship because it's new, it's fun, it's exciting. We have a tendency to take for granted the people that are closest to us and the people that we're in long-term relationships with. So there's a biological component. There's also a structural component in so many organizations. And if I may, let me give a little question for our wonderful listeners and see if this resonates with you. Who in your organization is responsible for making the first day a new employee is on the job great? Who's responsible for that? Maybe your head of HR, maybe their direct manager, maybe the entire team, maybe the company comes together to really make that first day special. And if you're getting anxious about this question and you think actually our first day isn't that special, oh, we've got great room to work with. But let's presume for sake of argument that you're like, yeah, Joey, I think we do a pretty good job on that first day on the job, the activate phase in my method. The question I would ask is, who's responsible for creating a remarkable experience on their day two on the job? Now, that silence you hear there, Matt, is the tumbleweed rolling by as most people go, gosh, now that you mention it, we've never actually had that specific conversation in our organization. We've talked a lot about first day. We haven't talked very much about day two, day three, day five, day 10, day 30. And what happens is we, i.e. the employer, the people who are already at the organization, know how the company operates. We know how it works. So for us, those days aren't any different than the previous days. But for a brand new employee coming into a new job after the fanfare and excitement of the first day celebration and welcome is over, they are left in a state of fear, doubt, uncertainty, confusion. Who do I report to? What do I do? Am I doing this right? Oh my gosh, the learning curve is so strong. What do they mean when they say that in meetings? I don't want to raise my hand and say, I don't understand the acronym or that phrase you're using because then I'll look like an idiot. And if we're not holding our employees' hands and helping them navigate and acclimate to our way of doing business, we never have the opportunity to have them as a long-term employee.
A lot of times we just forget about that. We assume, okay, you know what? We welcomed them in. Maybe, hopefully they had a great first day. I know a lot of times that's not always the case. But beyond that, yeah, what is there? What are the next steps?
Exactly.
So what's the cost of not focusing on this? What's the cost of not putting in this effort and focusing on onboarding and even that ongoing retention of your employees?
There are multiple costs, Matt. If we look at the time and energy cost, depending on which study you look at, on average, somewhere between 30 and 60-70% of new employees won't make the 100-day anniversary. Let me let that sink in a little bit. A brand new employee that you've hired, the average across all industries is 45%. 45% of new hires will not make the 100-day anniversary. 4% come on day one, go home, and never come back for day two. 4%. Yeah. These numbers are staggering. So there is a cost in terms of just the time and the energy that goes into finding, recruiting, hiring, and not getting any semblance of return on that investment. Then there's the emotional cost to our team, the revolving door feeling, and how that just crushes the morale of those that are in the organization, either quote unquote left behind or trying to keep the trains running on time while they're short staffed. And what happens is we pile on even more to our existing employees when our new employees aren't doing it. And then we expect them to bear the burden of that turnover in the new employee position. And next thing we know, we have our veteran employees, our long-term employees saying, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. And we're like, oh, we'll give you more money. We'll give you a better title. And they're like, no, it's not about that. It's about the fact that I feel zero support, zero respect, zero consideration. And now we've got a cycle that is really hard to pull out of. We're tail spinning down as an organization in terms of our culture and morale. And you've got all sorts of problems then, because then it starts to spin up and hurt customers. I mean, it's a chain, right? As soon as one of these links start to break, the whole system starts to collapse.
I was talking to somebody about employee retention a few weeks ago, and I came to the conclusion that there's a snowball effect to it. Like one action can happen, whether it's like one employee leaves, it's not just a direct result from that. Like there's a snowball effect. One employee leaves, and then what happens to the rest of the team? What happens to everything else? And then what happens when people start to realize how easy it is to leave? And what if I could leave? What would I do? Where would I go? How much more might I make and still be valued in my role?
Matt, it's so true. What happens when one of our coworkers, one of our colleagues decides to resign? We go home, we say to our significant other, our spouse, our partner, our roommate, our parents, whoever we're living with, oh, Matt is leaving. What is the first thing they say? Why? And then that makes us think, well, why are they leaving? Why is Matt leaving? And then as we start to answer that question in our own mind, to your point, we then start to ask, what does Matt know that I don't know? Does Matt have a better opportunity? Does Matt see that the ship is sinking? I worked for a company one time. There were 10 people on the team when I started in February. When I left in October, I didn't even make a year. I left in October. There were two of those original 10 that were still left in the organization. And part of the reason why I left is I looked around and I was like, these people have been here longer than I have. They're jumping ship. What do they know that I don't know? And it eventually rose to the level where the story I was telling myself was greater than the story management was telling me about why to stay. And as a result, I was gone.
So we try to put that figure and try to understand like what's the cost of employees leaving. And it's multiple exponential times more than you assume that it is.
Yeah. And if you're a dollars person, exactly. If you're a dollars person, the best statistics combined from a bunch of different research is take the annual salary of the person who's leaving times 2.5. That is the projected financial cost of losing that person. Because you have the cost of getting a new person in, hiring, getting that person up to speed, the loss in productivity. So if you've got a $100,000 employee that's going to leave, that's not a $100,000 impact on your bottom line. That's a $250,000 impact on your bottom line. Minimum.
Yeah.
That's before we get to the emotional impacts. That's just the hard dollar impacts. Most businesses can't sustain that. They can't handle those type of departures. And then when one leads to two, leads to five, forget about it. You're in that death spiral down again.
Yeah. It's the snowball that keeps growing.
Exactly.
So that feels overwhelming to me just thinking about it.
Absolutely. I get it. I empathize with that feeling, Matt.
And I imagine that pretty much most every leader, like where most leaders are already under a lot of stress. They've got a lot of things coming at them. They've got a lot of demands that they're having to care about. And so now you're asking them to care about their employees too. So what would you say to employers, to C-suite members, to managers who are overwhelmed with all of this and don't know how to care about all this stuff now?
Yeah, the first thing I would say, Matt, is I see you and I feel you. I'm a business owner too, and I get it. You're not in this alone. It feels like you're in this alone. It feels like no one appreciates just how hard it is to be a leader. And one of the things I tried to do in this book, this isn't just a book for employers. This is a book for employees as well, in the sense that I want employees to have more empathy for their leaders and to realize just how difficult this is. Once we acknowledge how difficult it is, though, the difference between a leader and a non-leader is a leader will never make it better than it is, will never make it worse than it is. They address reality as it is. This is the practical reality of the marketplace in 2023 and beyond. I understand this isn't what it felt like in 2017. I get it. But you know what? We're living on a completely different planet. And for all of you that are sitting around, and I say this from a place of love, I truly do, waiting for things to go back to the way they were, it's not going to happen. And in many ways, I'm sorry that it's not going to happen because I understand how stressful and overwhelming this can be. But on the other hand, I'm not sorry because the way it was working before wasn't really working.
Right.
If it was working and working beautifully, there wouldn't have been the massive change. People are going to want to work remotely for the rest of their lives because they had a taste of it. People are going to want more flexibility in their schedules for the rest of their lives because they had a taste of it. People are going to expect to be valued and appreciated by their employers. Why? Because in the pandemic, many of them received that valuing and received that respect and received that experience. So to think it's going to shift back is just a fool's errand. It's not going to happen. So the opportunity for managers, for leaders, for the C-suite is to say, we can become the employer of choice, not only in our region, in our industry, on the planet, by focusing on the experience we create for our people. And all the research shows, if you are creating remarkable employee experiences, your employees will then be able to go out and create remarkable customer experiences, which will grow your market share, which will increase your profits and your revenues. So this isn't just an altruistic like, oh, take care of them. You'll feel better about yourself. Oh, hearts and emojis, la, la, la. Yes, that'll happen. But more importantly, this will change your bottom line. This will be able to create a scenario where you can do more with less, where you can succeed in the marketplace in a way that you never have just by paying a little more attention to your people.
Well, and there's one other group in there that I don't want to overlook. You alluded to it earlier in that with this book, you want employees to be able to read this book to empathize with their leaders. When leaders can create this kind of experience and then employees get it, they create it for customers as well. But I think that employees also start to create these same experiences for each other.
Yes, 100%, Matt. Oh my gosh, you hit the nail on the head.
Yay.
Here's the thing. Creating remarkable employee experiences is not just the responsibility of your manager.
Great.
I speak to audiences around the world on the topic of both customer experience and employee experience. And one of the things I always do as a trick is I'll walk into the customer experience audience and I'll say, okay, who works in customer experience or customer service? And you see the hands of the people who have customer service on their business card or in their signature line or their email go up and no other hands raised. And I'm like, wrong. Every single one of you is part of the customer experience. In that same way, employee experience is not just the purview of the HR department. It is not just your human resources people who are involved in creating employee experience. In fact, what we find is that one of the main reasons people leave their jobs is because they have a horrible manager. They don't feel valued, seen, appreciated by their manager, who, by the way, their manager is not in the HR structure of the organization. Their manager might be sitting in sales or in marketing or in ops or whatever tech or whatever department you're in. We all have a responsibility to create more remarkable experiences for our direct reports, for the people we report to, and for the people who are kind of on the same plane, just everyone in the organization. So it's a huge opportunity. And lastly, I'll say, and you can tell I've got some strong opinions about this, Matt. Here's the thing. The people who get promoted, the people who get raises, the people who get great opportunities are the people who are fun to work with,
yeah,
who people enjoy working with, who people feel valued by. It's one thing to have someone in your organization that's your champion, kind of pulling you up the ladder. It's something completely different when everyone in your organization is your champion. You've got people pulling up the ladder. You've got people supporting you while you're in the middle of the ladder. You've got people pushing you up the ladder. This happens when we care about the people we work with.
That's it. It's creating that culture of care that helps take that work and spreads it out across everybody. So when you've got your employees focusing on the experience that they deliver to each other, focusing on the employee experience, hopefully that should take away some of that overwhelm that leaders would have. Oh, it's not just all on your shoulders. That's one area that should take away the overwhelm. The other area, and you talked about this earlier, was the fact that if you focus on it, you can do it in a simple framework that makes it easy for you to follow. So based on that, can you walk me through your 100-day framework?
Absolutely. So as a preview for everyone listening, I believe there are 8 phases in the employee journey. They all start with the letter A. And the reason they do that is not to confuse you and make you lose track of which one is which, but rather as a reminder that if we get each of these phases right, it's like getting straight A's on your report card. It's a feedback mechanism from your employees to say you are crushing it. Okay. So here are the 8 phases.
Never thought of it that way. It's like
getting straight A's. It's everything you want. It's everything you were told you needed to get. Get some straight A's. You'll be feeling good. All right. So the first phase is the assess phase. This is when a prospective employee is considering whether or not they want to come work for you. They're looking at your job listings. They're checking out your website. They might be talking to a recruiter. They're going through your interview process. They're experiencing what it would be like to consider a position with you. We then come to phase 2, the accept phase. This has 2 parts. Number 1, we make an offer to this candidate of employment. And if we're lucky, that candidate accepts our offer. Now, the secret in this phase is to not make that document feel like it was written by a lawyer. I say that as a recovering attorney, okay? The problem is we're inviting people into a new experience with us. We should preview just how remarkable it's going to be and give them that emotional hit that we are excited and we want them. We then come to phase 3, the affirm phase. Now, a lot of folks listening in are probably familiar with the phrase buyer's remorse. I'd like to introduce you to a phrase you might not be as familiar with, which is new hire's remorse. It operates just like buyer's remorse. It's scientifically proven that after an employee accepts their job offer, they begin to doubt the decision they just made. Now, this doubt is only exacerbated if they were interviewing for multiple positions and had to accept your offer before they got an offer from one of the other places they interviewed with. Because they're always wondering, will the grass be greener on the other side? Should I have waited a little longer and taken that other job? If we don't affirm their decision to accept our offer and come work with us, we're creating a delta in the emotional experience, a difference between our relief that we finally found someone that we feel good about and we want to join our team, and their deficit of, I'm not sure if this was the right choice. What's it going to be like? Will I like it there? Oh, what's this going to happen? We then come to phase 4, the activate phase. We talked about this earlier. This is that first day on the job. What are you doing on that first day on the job to create something so incredible, so amazing that when they go home that night, they've got something to talk about? We then come to phase 5, the acclimate phase. Now, this is that day 2 and beyond. Often in most organizations, it runs for several weeks, if not months, where the new employee is acclimating to your way of doing business. They're learning your systems, your processes, your communication styles, your cadence. in this phase, we've got to remember constantly to hold their hand and help them acclimate to our way of doing business. We then come to phase six, the accomplish phase. This is the phase when the employee accomplishes the goal they originally had when they had decided to apply for a job with you. Pro tip here, all you leaders, their goal is not a paycheck. You may think it's a paycheck, and you may think, but I'm delivering on the paycheck I'm giving. And the paycheck is important. Don't get me wrong. But it is rare, if not so rare, like unbelievably rare, unicorn level rare, that that's actually what their goal is. They want to grow. They want to learn. They want more autonomy. They want a chance for leadership. They want a promotion. They want more responsibility. They want more possibility. They want more freedom, more flexibility. For every employee, it's different. As an employer, you need to track that and then celebrate with them when they achieve that. Because once they achieve that, ideally, they're setting new goals that we're, again, helping them to achieve, track, and celebrate. We then come to phase seven, the adopt phase. This is when the employee becomes loyal to you and only you. They're not listening to calls from a headhunter. They're not looking at, you know, job listings and thinking, oh, I should go work somewhere else. They are committed. They are bought in. And last but not least, if you've navigated them through all of these seven phases, the employee journey, you reach the eighth phase, the holy grail, nirvana, the advocate phase, where your employee becomes a raving fan publicly. What do I mean by that? They're writing reviews on Glassdoor. Yeah. They're going on social media saying how much they love where they work. And anytime you're looking for a new employee, you have an open position in your organization, they are actively recruiting their friends, their colleagues, their former coworkers from other places they've worked, the best of the best, to come join the team because they are so bought in to your way of doing it. And if you have a doubt about whether an employee is an advocate or not, here's a simple test. If you have an open position in your organization, how many of the candidates that you're interviewing are direct referrals from your existing employees? If that number is not a significant double-digit number, you actually don't have advocates. You may have adopters, and adopters are wonderful. But if you want your business to be sustainable and really grow, you need advocates. I have never met an employer who said, Joey, I'm all good on referrals. We don't need any more referrals. We don't want. No, most people's, their entire customer business is built out of referral programs and referral incentives and thinking about customer referrals. Just take that same thinking and apply it to your employees. Measure it, track it, develop programs, pay attention to it. And suddenly your employees become your HR team, marketing your business and driving new folks to be recruited, interviewed, and hired into your organization. So those are the eight phases. I know there's a lot there, but happy to dive into any piece of it that you think might be interesting, Matt.
Oh, yeah, I would love to. But really quickly, since we were just on the advocate phase and talking about employee referrals, when we were talking earlier about the costs that go into recruiting and hiring, if you've got advocates, if you've got that significant number of advocates that are doing that work for you, that cuts down on that cost as well.
Cuts down on that cost tremendously. And let's look at how most organizations currently value that. Many organizations think nothing of hiring a recruiting agency or a marketing agency to market their open position. They'll happily pay them thousands of dollars a month. And in many situations, especially for more executives, they're paying a percentage of that executive salary as a finding fee when that person comes in. Now let's look at the typical employee referral program. Hey, Matt, if you refer us a new employee and we actually hire them and they stay here for 3 months, we'll give you $50.
Yay.
You tumbleweed of no one participating in your program. Why are we willing to pay an external recruiting source $50,000 plus for the right candidate, but we won't pay our own people more than $50 for the right candidate? This is a fundamental flaw. And if you don't think that your internal adopters and advocates don't recognize the disparity between those two treatments, folks, you've got your head in the sand on a bunch of issues then, it sounds like, right? I mean, this is not complicated. It's just about saying, am I going to publicly value my employees in a way that they feel seen, heard, and appreciated? And one way to do that is with an employee referral program.
With whatever you're communicating or delivering to your employees, can they look at that and recognize, oh, you know what? They really do value me. And in that situation, if I'm looking at what they're offering me versus what they would offer an external recruiter, I'm not really valued, am I?
Matt, you just said something that I want to double down on, if I may.
Yeah.
It is almost impossible for a human to end a relationship where they feel valued.
Yeah.
If you think about all the relationships you've ever had, dating relationships, relationships with family members, friends from school, employers, employees, and you think about the relationships where you're not in relationship with them anymore, a significant percentage of those hinge on the fact that you didn't feel seen, heard, appreciated. In other words, valued in that relationship. If you're feeling valued, I mean, at our core, that's what we want as humans. That's what we need as humans. It is the life force that drives so many people forward. Do I feel that the things I do in the world are appreciated, that they're creating impact, that they're creating value for others? And do I feel valued as a result? This isn't curing cancer. This is just about caring and showing a modicum of appreciation for people who are devoting the bulk of their waking hours to you. They are spending more time with you than they're spending with their families. They're spending more time with you than they're spending with themselves. And yet, how often do we take them for granted?
When I feel valued, I am more likely to go above and beyond for that person or that organization or that team that values me. I'm more than willing to go bat for them. I'm more than willing to defend them when they need defending.
100%. So this, again, this comes back to that piece, that comment I made earlier. This isn't just the altruistic, like, oh, be nice to people. Although that's a great philosophy.
Yeah, good start.
There are benefits to being nice to people. People will be nice to you. It's amazing how that works. It's a reciprocal effect of the human condition. It's not any more complicated than this. It's actually this simple, but it does require intentionality. It does require your focus and effort.
It does. And it lays it out, like, at least this framework lays it out to say, here are the places to be intentional. And I look at these different phases and I think about my previous career and all the different roles that I had. And I feel like a lot of times one of the places where companies really drop the ball is on that first day, on day one. I remember, I guess this was maybe 21 years ago, my first day in a new role. I came in, I was so excited. I was so excited to have gotten the offer, to be coming in, you know, come in with my new laptop bag. I'm a new employee and here I am. And the hiring manager, my manager, meets me and says, hi, we don't have your laptop yet. It should be here tomorrow. Spoiler alert, it wasn't there tomorrow. And I'm in meetings all day today. So here, I've got this binder for you to read. Sit at this desk and read from this 4-inch binder full of SOPs. He came back, I think sometime after lunch, just to check in. Hey, Matt, how's it going? How are you doing with your reading? Great. And then that whole day, like, I kept thinking, is this the norm? Is this really how it's supposed to be?
It's such a missed opportunity, Matt, in so many employees' experience. When I talk to audiences about this or chat with folks on podcasts, almost every human of working age has had a horrible first day experience. And here's the crazy thing about that. Do you know who usually picks the start date? The employer.
Yeah.
The employer usually says, great, we'd like you to start on this date. There is no excuse for you to not have the tools that your employees need to do their job ready for them on the date you picked. Yeah. If you're afraid you're not going to have the laptop 2 weeks from now, have them start a month from now. By the way, the laptop is probably something you could order during the interview process. because you're going to hire one of these people, right? Yeah. So the same day the job description goes up to hire the position, hire the computer. Get the computer ready. Get it coming your way. I understand that business cards may not be ready, right? I know I'm dating myself a little when I talk about business cards, but if you do have business cards, the second the offer is accepted, you should have the design already set for that. That should be part of your process, part of your system, because nothing says we value and appreciate you more than showing up as if they knew you were coming. Stop and think about going to a dinner party at a friend's house. They invite you over to dinner and you walk in and they say, "Oh, Matt, so great to have you here. Here, let me take your coat. Welcome. Come on in." And you walk in and they've got your favorite music playing. And they're like, "Oh, hey, I see Joey's with you. Joey, I know you love root beer. We've got a root beer on ice chilling for you. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Oh, what can we get you? Oh, here's some appetizers. And I know you had mentioned once upon a time that you're allergic to tomatoes. So let me just explain to you, there are no tomatoes anywhere in these appetizers." Before you've even taken a seat, you feel more valued and appreciated than you probably felt going to any other dinner party in your life. And all we're talking about is some basic levels of human decency. We can apply this with our employees in the same way. Have the desk ready for them. Have the chair ready for them. Have the laptop ready for them. Have the tools ready for them. And do not put an employee in a room by themselves to review a binder, to watch videos made in the 70s about how not to harass someone in the workplace. All this BS stuff that we do on first days that just sap any feeling of energy, enthusiasm, or excitement that a new employee has about their first day on the job.
That's it. I mean,
it's that simple. To use your favorite word, it's that simple. And yet so many organizations completely fail in this regard.
And I go back to thinking through, I teach this around the customer journey and all the different interactions. What do you want the customer to feel? Same thing can be said with this. Through all these phases, what do you want your employees to feel at this certain phase? And sometimes it's they're already feeling something. And if it's excitement, then what do you need to do to get them to hold on to that feeling of excitement?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Create the feelings you want and create ways to extend those feelings over time.
So when we look at these different phases and you've got a leader that says, "Okay, I get it. I'm bought in. For our new hires, for every new employee coming in, we're following these different phases. We're focusing on that 100-day journey. However, we've got all these existing employees behind us that we haven't been focusing on. So what do we do about them?"
What we need to do is not forget that they're there too. Nothing hurts more. Then, and we see this with cable companies and cell phone companies all the time, where we see, "Oh, if you're a new customer, you can have cable for $7 a month. But if you're an existing cable customer, you need to pay $178 a month." And we're like, it would be better if I had never been in relationship with you than to be in relationship with you long term. If we start to implement these type of things for our new employees, you're right. We can't forget about our existing employees. Now, here's the thing. The majority of your existing staff is somewhere in the acclimate, accomplish, adopt, or advocate phase. They're playing the back nine, so to speak, of these four phases. All right. So what we need to do is, first of all, track and find out where everyone is. Let's get clear on the practical realities. Take a list of your existing employees. Compare them to the list that I just gave you of the eight phases and assign each employee to one of the phases. "Oh, Matt's in the advocate phase. He's made referrals to us. Awesome. You know, Joey, he's still kind of learning the ropes. He's been here for 6 months. Seems like kind of a slow learner. I think he's probably still in the acclimate phase. What can we do to propel him from the acclimate phase to the accomplish phase?" And the goal as a leader, and again, whether this is C-suite or whether you're a manager, you know, responsible for one or two direct reports, is to know where your people are and what will it take to move them to the next phase in the journey. Now, for some of them, that's going to be identifying new skill sets. For some of them, it's going to be reinforcing their existing skill sets. For some of them, it's going to be having crucial conversations with them about, like, "Hey, we actually need to focus on this." For some of them, it's as simple as sitting down and saying, "Hey, here's the crazy thing. we think nothing of in an interview process saying, where do you see yourself in 3 years? Which, by the way, is a horrible question to ask in an interview. Okay. But you know when it's not a horrible question to ask? When somebody's been with the company for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's a great question then. So you've been here for 2 years. You've learned the ropes. You've figured a lot of things out. You're performing at a high level. Awesome. What makes you excited to come to work 2 years from now? What are you doing? What are we doing as your employer to create the kind of environment that 2 years from now, you've got a spring in your step that matches the spring in your step you have today? Oh, wait, you don't have a spring in your step today? Let's explore that. But having these conversations is so important. It is so valuable. And again, regardless of where you fit in the quote unquote hierarchy of your organization, there is an opportunity for you to have these type of conversations with the people that surround you, that either work directly reporting to you or even peers and colleagues that are on the same page as you. Because you can be creating remarkable experiences for your equals in the organization, just as well as you can for folks that are quote unquote, not your equals. And by the way, I'm using big air quotes on that because right. Theoretically, all the humans, we're all have a level of equality with each other or should, but there's an opportunity for everyone to be a leader, even if that title isn't in your signature line.
And again, hopefully that helps make it less overwhelming for the leader, recognizing, oh, you know what? I've got a team of people that can help with this, that can help with some of the work across these phases.
And what is your boss's boss going to think when they see you being a leader helping with these issues? They're going to think, oh, this person needs more responsibility. This person needs a promotion. More people should be reporting to them. They should be in charge of more projects, more unique things. This has beautiful benefits to us personally as well.
It goes back to creating a much better experience for everybody that you interact with, and then hopefully they do the same for each other. And then it spreads out to the customer as well. It feeds so into the customer experience.
Exactly. Customer experience and employee experience are two sides of the same coin. As you improve one, you improve the other. As one starts to go down, the other starts to go down. They work in harmony with each other.
Joey, I've got one last question for you. If you were to create a 5-song soundtrack or Never Lose an Employee Again, what songs would you choose?
Oh, I love this question, Matt. And I want to, if you're open to it, I want to turn this question back on you as well and hear what you might pick as the songs for the soundtrack as well. Let's keep this exciting. All right.
Dueling soundtracks.
Dueling soundtracks, if you're game. All right. So, this is such a fun question. All right. How about I give you one and I'll give a brief explanation and you give me one and we'll volley back and forth for a bit. All right. Fun. So the first one I'm going to pick is from the country legend Bonnie Raitt. And the song is Give 'Em Something to Talk About. And when we talked about that first day on the job, what are they going to tell their loved ones when they get home that night when somebody says, how was your first day? Give them something to talk about. Create remarkable experiences on day one so that they can spread the story when they get home. What about you? What's a song you might pick, Matt?
All right. So if you want to give them something to talk about, and if you want that new employee to hold on to that level of excitement they have, then on day one, you've got to do as Cool in the Gang says, celebrate.
Oh, nice. I love it. All right. How about this one? The 80s hair band, fabulous hair band, Europe, The Final Countdown, to remind you that there's a clock ticking on these first 100 days experiences. And every day, you're cutting against that goal of having them be a raving fan by day 101. So the clock is moving. Keep working to create remarkable experiences every day. You can hear it. You can feel it,
that's
right?
Doing the air keyboard.
Exactly. Air keyboards.
Oh, wow. I got to think during that time frame, during that final countdown, especially in those early days, you talk about the employee not always knowing like what to do, or they asking the right questions. They don't want to say the wrong word. You need to have somebody to hold their hand through that process. So I would go with the Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
I love it, love it, love it. All right, I'm going to go with one that's maybe a little contrary. I'm going to go to Dolly Parton's song, 9 to 5, but not for the reasons you might be thinking. Here's my take on 9 to 5. The best organizations in the world pay attention to what their employees are doing between 5 p.m. and 9 a.m. What I mean by that is the more you care about what's going on in your employees' personal lives, you make space for their childcare needs, their elder needs, the vacation they need to take, whatever stress they're dealing with at home, the grief they might be dealing with at home. The more you embrace the whole person, the more likely they will feel seen, heard, and appreciated, and by default, then valued in your organization. So to paraphrase on Dolly Parton, it's not just about working 9 to 5. It's about paying attention to 5 to 9.
That's it. Wow. And that helps them feel valued. So if we're talking about what you want them to feel, then I'm going with, and I can never get it right, if it's blue suede or blue suede, hooked on a feeling.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Hooked on a feeling indeed. All right. I'm going to take another turn here. And let's say, I think it's very important to always be thinking about how are we teaching our people? How are we educating our people? How are we helping them to continue to grow personally and professionally? So I'm going to go with Alice Cooper's School's Out for Summer. It's out for summer. You need to be constantly experiencing growth and learning opportunities every day, not just in the summer.
Yeah. School is always in.
Exactly.
Wow. When I was reading through this, I kept thinking about, okay, it's, you think of the hiring process. You want these certain employees and you want them to stay. You want them to feel wanted. You want them to feel wanted to come work, but you also want them to feel wanted to actually stay there. So I'm going with Cheap Tricks. I want you to want me.
Oh, so true. So true, Matt. All right. Last but not least on my top five, we talked about those adopters and those advocates, those people that have been with the veteran employees. You're doing all these great things for your new employees coming in. But what about the people who've already been there? I'm going to go with the iconic song by Janet Jackson of What Have You Done For Me Lately? You need to constantly be finding ways to create moments of personal and emotional connection with your employees and keep on doing it.
And honestly, because you name checked this in the book by Janet Jackson, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty, I got the same. What have you done for me lately?
I love it. I love it. We end on the same song on the playlist. So if there's one takeaway from the entire conversation we've had is keep in mind that this job of creating remarkable employee experiences is never done. Some people may see that as overwhelming. I see that as an opportunity for you to continue to do things so that all of your employees have a clear answer to what has your employer done for you lately to make this the kind of place you love coming to work.
And then they don't even have to ask. They don't have to think about it. They already know. They already remember. Joey, I have loved you coming back on the show. I've loved talking with you today. I've loved reading the book and I've learned so much, but where can people go to learn more?
Well, the good news is the book is out. It's ready for you right now. So if you are the kind of person that likes to read physically the hardcover copy of the book, you can get it. If you're the kind of person that likes to read on your e-reader so you can highlight things and take notes, we've got the electronic version of the book right. And if you've enjoyed listening to my voice on this podcast, which maybe you have, maybe you haven't, I narrate the book in the audiobook. So we've got it available in any format you'd like to consume books with. It's available at all places you'd find books, whether that's Barnes and Noble, Amazon, your favorite indie bookstore. Go out and support some of those indie bookstores. If you're not a regular indie bookstore buyer, consider going to a place like bookshop.org. It's a website that will find the local independent bookstore near you, and you can order online and they'll ship it to you. It's great. It's a way to support these small businesses that are out in our communities who are creating these beautiful opportunities for all of us to keep growing, to keep learning, and to keep reading.
There you go. And when you get the book too, you've actually created an experience that goes along with reading the book.
I have. On the first page of the book, you'll find there's a chance to experience the book. So I'll tell you, Matt, I love it. You know about this. It's so brilliant. So what we wanted to do as a writer, it drives me crazy when I read a book and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I could tell the writer how much I love this part or how much this part's connecting, or I wonder what they meant by this. And many writers include their emails in the book and you can email them, but lots of times that's a little bit of an extra hurdle to look up their email and get up the courage. Oh, well, what will this writer think of me? You know, do. So I create something called the Experience the Book. When you start reading the book, you go to this website and you sign up to experience the book. Now, depending on how much information you give me, I'm going to ask for your email. I'm going to ask your phone number. I'm going to ask your mailing address. You pick which ones, how many or how few you want to give me. you will start to have experiences during the time you're reading the book. So I'm going to ask you, do you think it's going to take a couple of days, a couple of weeks, or a month to read this book? Based on what you select, there will be a series of communications from me that are timed to your reading pace. Now, where it's really fun, and I hope those who are listening will sign up to experience the book, if you respond to any of those communications, it comes straight to me, straight to my inbox, so I can turn around and respond back to you. I would love to be in conversation with my readers. I had that privilege with my first book, which has now been read by people, I think we're at north of 100 countries now, where people have actually read the book, and I've been able to have communications with those folks. Please sign up to experience the book and let me connect with you as a reader or a listener of the book, because nothing would make me happier.
Well, thank you not only for the lessons, but then also for creating that kind of personalized experience too. I love that.
Joey, it's my pleasure, Matt. At least I could do for an experience guy, right? We got to try to create remarkable experiences wherever we can.
Hooray. Joey, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.
Oh, Matt, my pleasure. And thanks to everybody who listened in. So appreciate you spending some time. I'm a big fan of this podcast. It was an honor to be here. All of you loyal listeners, keep listening to Matt. He drops all kinds of wisdom episode after episode. Keep coming back for more. And I'll put in a plug for you. We talked about writing reviews on Glassdoor. Go write a review for Matt's podcast, okay? Get on to whatever platform you're in. Write a review for Matt's podcast, because here's the thing. Having made podcasts myself, it helps us keep going. It helps us to know that people out there are listening, are finding value. It'll take you less than 10 minutes, and I promise you, it'll mean the world to me. So go write some reviews about this awesome show.
That'll help me feel valued. Thank you, Joey. I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Joey Coleman. You can learn more from him at joeycoleman.com. From his lessons and resources to speaking engagements and consulting, you'll find lots of opportunities to help you keep your customers and your employees. And if you want to go even deeper into the lessons we discussed today, then be sure and grab your copy of his book, Never Lose an Employee Again. If you're enjoying the Simple Brand Podcast, go ahead, hit the subscribe button. It's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Leslie O'Flahaven. Now, if you've followed me for a while, then you know that one of the key behaviors that go into simple experiences is to lose the jargon. And there's no better person for me to talk to about that than Leslie, as she's an expert on using plain language in customer experience and in the workplace. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Leslie's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.